Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
And we supported the idea of the United States, of personally, of President Trump, to stop this war, to make a diplomatic way of finishing this war. And we are ready for trilateral, as President said. This is a good signal about trilateral. I think this is very good.
In an unusual show of diplomatic force, seven senior European leaders joined Ukrainian President Zelensky for meetings with President Trump at the White House Monday. Trump's now trying to arrange a summit between Zelensky and Russian President Vladimir Putin to end the war in Ukraine. But Trump did not call for an immediate ceasefire.
But we can work a deal where we're working on a peace deal while they're fighting. They have to fight. I wish they could stop. I'd like them to stop. But strategically, that could be a disadvantage for one side or the other.
Will there be a negotiated peace to end the war in Ukraine? What could it look like? What's at stake for Ukraine, Russia, Europe, and the U.S.? We'll host a debate between political science professor John Mearsheimer in Chicago and Ukrainian historian and socialist activist Denis Pilash, who will join us from Kyiv, the capital of Ukraine. Then to California, where an immigrant rights activist and nurse was violently detained while monitoring ICE agents earlier this month.
Get off her head!
Get off me!
Get off your knee!
Get off her head!
Get it off!
Get back! Get back!
Get off her head!
We'll speak to Amanda Trebach, a U.S. citizen who was violently detained, then released from federal custody without charge. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Trump says he's arranging trilateral talks aimed at ending Russia's war in Ukraine. Trump made the claim after wrapping up a hastily arranged summit at the White House Monday with European and NATO leaders joined by Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. Trump promised the U.S. would help guarantee Ukraine's security in any future peace deal with Russia, but said European countries would lead the efforts. Trump did not clarify whether he'd send U.S. forces to Ukrainian soil if necessary. German Chancellor Friedrich Merz said Berlin remained open to participating in a peacekeeping mission. He also said the next round of negotiations should come only after Russia and Ukraine agree to a ceasefire.
Let's try to put pressure on Russia, because the credibility of these efforts we are undertaking today are depending on at least a ceasefire from the beginning of the serious negotiations from next step on.
Trump countered he hopes to move more directly toward a peace deal with Russia, adding, quote, "I don't think you need a ceasefire," unquote. Trump then went on to pause the summit to call Russian President Vladimir Putin. The Kremlin later confirmed the roughly 40-minute call, calling it frank and very constructive, without stating if Putin had agreed to meet with Ukrainian President Zelensky. Throughout the day, Trump was friendly and cordial with Zelensky, unlike in February when Trump and Vice President J.D. Vance berated the Ukrainian president before White House aides asked him to leave the White House. Trump's pressing Ukraine to exchange territory for an end to the war, something Zelensky's rejected. Meanwhile, Russia's foreign ministry called the prospect of NATO forces in Ukraine categorically unacceptable. We'll host a debate on Monday's White House summit and Russia's war in Ukraine after headlines. Tens of thousands of Palestinians are fleeing Gaza City as Israel intensifies its attacks on the Gaza Strip's largest population center ahead of a full-scale military invasion. Al Jazeera reports Israeli attacks today have killed at least 26 people, among them 8 Palestinians, killed in a strike on tents housing displaced families in Khan Yunis, and another 4 killed in an attack on tents in Deir al-Balah. 2 people were reportedly shot and killed seeking aid at a distribution site run by the notorious Israel and U.S.-backed so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. Meanwhile, an airdrop of humanitarian aid over Deir al-Balah on Monday set off a scramble amongst desperately hungry people hoping for a meal. Displaced Palestinian Amin Abu Muksib came away empty-handed.
This is aerial humiliation, not airdropping. The package is filled with about 12 boxes. More than 1,000 people gather on the package. People crush each other, and it's not enough for a single family. People are fighting. There are like 10 fights on each package, and people are dying. Here you hear gunfire. There you find someone dead under the package. We can't take it anymore.
Hamas says it has agreed to a proposal for a 60-day ceasefire that would see it release 10 living hostages and the bodies of 18 dead hostages in return for hundreds of Palestinians being held in Israeli prisons. The proposal is almost identical to an earlier ceasefire plan advanced by the U.S. envoy Steve Witkoff. Israeli media report Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has dismissed the offer and signaled he still plans to invade Gaza City and forcefully displace its entire population to the southern Gaza Strip. This after, on Sunday, close to 1 million Israelis demanded that Netanyahu not invade Gaza City and agree to a ceasefire and a release of the hostages. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, Islamic State-backed fighters armed with machetes killed at least 52 civilians, including women and children, in the eastern regions of Beni and Lubero. That's according to the UN, which reports that in recent days, ISIL-backed rebels with the Allied Democratic Forces set homes on fire, tied up residents, and attacked them with machetes and hoes. ADF is among several militia groups clashing over land and resources in the mineral-rich eastern DRC. This is a local official from Beni.
This is a genocide happening in silence. Even the international community says nothing. For 11 years already, the population has been victim of these massacres. We must speak to the authorities, international authorities, national authorities, provincial and local authorities, to restore peace. We are tired of massacres of all kinds. We are tired of burying our brothers. We are tired of this carnage.
The latest massacre comes amidst ongoing tensions between the DRC's military and Rwanda-backed M23 rebels, with both sides missing a Monday deadline to reach a final peace agreement during talks brokered by Qatar. Democratic state lawmakers returned to Texas Monday, ending a 2-week walkout that broke quorum in the state legislature and temporarily blocked Republicans from ramming through a new gerrymandered congressional map for Texas at the behest of President Trump. Republican leaders had threatened to arrest or remove from office over 50 Democratic lawmakers who fled Texas earlier this month for Illinois, New York, and other states. On Monday, Texas's Republican Speaker of the House, Dustin Burrows, said Democratic lawmakers would only be allowed to leave the House chambers if they agreed to be released into the custody of Texas law enforcement. Democratic State Rep. Nicole Collier of Fort Worth was forced to sleep on the floor of Texas's state capitol overnight after she refused the order rather than accept the monitoring.
Been assigned to our Democratic state representatives only to ensure that they get back to the Capitol to pass the racist maps and all the other legislation that they want that can harm and disenfranchise marginalized communities.
President Trump said Monday he'll soon sign an executive order banning voting by mail, calling the longstanding practice a fraud. Writing on social media, Trump also said he planned to target, quote, highly inaccurate, very expensive, and seriously controversial voting machines, unquote. Trump's pledge came just days after he made these comments to Fox News following talks in Alaska with Russian President Vladimir Putin.
You know, Vladimir Putin said something, one of the most interesting things. He said your election was rigged because you have mail-in voting.
Constitutional scholars have rejected Trump's plans to ban mail-in ballots and voting machines by executive order as a non-starter, as state and local governments are in charge of administering elections. Newsmax has agreed to pay $67 million to settle a lawsuit brought by Dominion Voting Systems over the far-right TV channel's repeated lies about the 2020 election. Following Joe Biden's victory, Newsmax personalities and guests spread the baseless conspiracy theory that the election results were fraudulent and that Dominion's voting hardware and software were to blame. The settlement comes more than 2 years after Fox News agreed to pay Dominion more than $787 million to settle a similar case so they didn't have to go to court. Two more Republican governors have announced they're dispatching National Guard troops to Washington, D.C. to assist President Trump's federal takeover of law enforcement in the nation's capital. The additional forces from Mississippi and Louisiana bring the total number of National Guard troops deployed to D.C. to over 1,800. Vermont's Republican Governor Phil Scott has declined a federal request to send his state's National Guard soldiers. Meanwhile, Reuters reports the White House has dispatched social media teams alongside FBI agents executing arrest warrants to generate videos promoting Trump's crackdown on D.C. The practice violates longstanding Justice Department norms against politicizing criminal investigations. The social media teams filmed and edited a video showing the arrest of Sean Charles Dunn, a Justice Department employee who was fired and charged with assault after he shouted fascists at federal agents and hurled a Subway sandwich at one of them. A video of Dunn's arrest posted on X has garnered 2.4 million views. Trump's hand-picked interim U.S. attorney for Washington, D.C., former Fox News personality Jeanine Pirro, celebrated Dunn's arrest.
And then he took a Subway sandwich about this big and took it and threw it at the officer. He thought it was funny. Well, he doesn't think it's funny today because we charged him with a felony, assault on a police officer, and we're going to back the police to the hilt.
In California, hundreds of people gathered for a vigil Friday demanding justice for 52-year-old Carlos Roberto Montoya, an immigrant from Guatemala, who was struck and killed on the freeway as he tried to escape federal immigration agents during a raid at a Home Depot in Monrovia. Montoya has lived in the United States for 3 years and was a day laborer. He has four daughters and grandchildren. His death comes as federal immigration raids have increasingly targeted immigrant workers, with activists condemning companies like Home Depot over their complicity. And the union representing thousands of striking Air Canada flight attendants announced early Tuesday morning it had reached a tentative contract deal with the airline, ending a days-long walkout. The agreement must still be approved by the 10,000 flight attendants who walked off the job Saturday demanding higher wages. The workers defied government-issued orders deeming their strike illegal, risking fines and even possible jail time. This is Mark Hancock, president of the Canadian Union of Public Employees, speaking Monday in Ontario.
We're going to stay strong. We're going to stay committed to making sure that those workers can do the job that they love doing, and actually be able to afford a roof over their heads, to afford caring for their families. And if it means folks like me going to jail, then so be it. If it means our union being fined, then so be it.
The tentative deal comes after about 8 months of negotiations. Air Canada is Canada's largest airline. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, we look at the summit at the White House yesterday. What is the future for Russia and Ukraine? We'll host a debate from Chicago and Kyiv. Stay with us.
San Benito Santo de mi Veracruz, San Benito Santo de mi Veracruz. Ahí vienen los barcos, con negros van tú, con negritos van tú.
Dale, Navidad.
Quedito y como tú, quedito y como tú, porque está durmiendo, oye. El niño Jesús, el niño Jesús.
Radio Jarocho here in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Trump says he's begun arranging for a summit between Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and Russian President Vladimir Putin, followed by a trilateral summit with the goal of ending Russia's war on Ukraine. Trump made the announcement after hosting a high-stakes summit at the White House with Zelensky and seven European leaders, British Prime Minister Keir Starmer, French President Emmanuel Macron, Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni, German Chancellor Friedrich Merz, Finland's President Alexander Stubb, European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen, and NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte. The meeting came 3 days after Trump held face-to-face talks with Putin in Alaska. Major differences remain between Ukraine and Russia. Trump also talked to Putin for 40 minutes in the midst of his meeting with the European leaders and Zelensky. Putin's insisting Russia keep areas of Ukraine that it seized, including the Donbas region. During his meeting with Trump, Zelensky stressed the importance of security guarantees for Ukraine.
And this is a part, I think, it's not a part for the war and to defend us. It also will be a part for security guarantees, to strengthen our army, to rearm Ukrainian army. This is very, very important. And it depends how much money we need to rearm. For example, the question of air defense, we spoke about it with President Trump, and I'm happy that we have now bilateral decisions and we work on it with production, American production. Nobody in Europe has so many air defense like Patriots, for example. We need it very much, and this is also about defending.
After the meeting, President Trump promised the U.S. would help guarantee Ukraine's security in any future peace deal with Russia, but said European countries would lead the efforts and didn't clarify whether he'd send U.S. forces to Ukrainian soil. The Financial Times reports Ukraine offered the U.S. a $100 billion weapons deal to help win security guarantees. During the White House summit, German Chancellor Friedrich Merz pressed for a ceasefire before Russia and Ukraine hold direct talks.
The next steps ahead are the more complicated ones now. The path is open. You opened it last Friday. But now the way is open for complicated negotiations. And to be honest, we all would like to see a ceasefire at the latest from the next meeting on. I can't imagine that the next meeting would take place without a ceasefire. So let's work on that, and let's try to put pressure on Russia, because the credibility of these efforts we are undertaking today are depending on at least a ceasefire from the beginning of the serious negotiations from next step on. So I would like to emphasize this aspect and would like to see a ceasefire from the next meeting, which should be a trilateral meeting wherever it takes place.
Although before Trump's summit with Putin in Alaska, he promised severe consequences if Putin didn't agree to a ceasefire, he is now dismissing the need for an immediate ceasefire in Ukraine.
I don't think you need a ceasefire. You know, if you look at the six deals that I settled this year, they were all at war. I didn't do any ceasefires. And I know that it might be good to have, but I can also understand strategically why, well, you know, one country or the other wouldn't want it. You have a ceasefire and they rebuild and rebuild and rebuild and, you know, maybe they don't want that. But if you look at the six deals that we made peace and you know, long-term, long-running wars, I didn't do any ceasefires.
This all comes as Russia launched 270 drones and 10 missiles overnight in what's being called Russia's largest airstrike on Ukraine since July. We're joined now by two guests. John Mearsheimer is a professor of political science at the University of Chicago, author of most recently How States Think, The Rationality of Foreign Policy. In 2014, he wrote a widely read piece for Foreign Affairs headlined, Why the Ukraine Crisis is the West's Fault. He's joining us from Chicago. And in Kyiv, the capital of Ukraine, we're joined by Denis Pilash, a Ukrainian political scientist, historian, a member of the Ukrainian Democratic Socialist Organization, Socialny Rukh, and an editor at Commons, Journal of Social Criticism. Let's begin with Denis Pilash in Kyiv. We're going to go to Professor Mearsheimer in Chicago. If you can respond to what's taken place, we just had you on Friday, but that was even before the Trump-Putin summit in Alaska. So these developments that are quite historic over the last few days, from that summit to the meeting at the White House, and what you think has been accomplished.
Well, I don't think that much has changed, Amy. I think the Europeans and the Ukrainians remain deeply committed to a ceasefire. The Russians are opposed, and Trump made it clear that there was not going to be a ceasefire. With regard to a real peace agreement, I think the sides remain so far apart that it's hard to imagine that you're going to get a peace agreement. What Trump would like to do is he'd like Zelensky and Putin to sit down and work out a deal. But I don't understand how that could possibly happen, given the position of the Europeans and the Ukrainians on one side and the Russians on the other side. The third thing that I take away from this meeting is that you see that the Europeans and Ukraine are basically joined at the hip. There is hardly any daylight between the positions on each side. And the outlier here is really Trump. If you look at the meeting, you just look at the photographs, you listen to the conversation, it's really like Trump arrayed against the Europeans and the Ukrainians. And I think what Trump is trying to do, and you saw this reflected in the meeting, is he's trying to move away ever so gently from this conflict. He is no longer interested in taking full responsibility, and he's putting the burden of dealing with the Russians on the Ukrainians and on the Europeans. And this is why he's pushing for a meeting between President Putin and President Zelensky that does not include him, because he wants them to figure out how to solve it. He's tried. He's been unable to do it.
I want to get Denis Pilash's take. We just had our connection drop in the capital, Kyiv, but I think we're reconnected right now. The Ukrainian political scientist, historian, member of the Ukrainian Democratic Socialist Organization. As you look at what happened in Alaska, Denis, on Friday, right through to this historic meeting at the White House on Monday, your response to whether you think there's been any progress made, and if you think a peace deal is on the horizon?
Well, honestly, it isn't likely that a real peace deal or even a ceasefire is on the horizon, because the war that was deliberately unleashed on Ukrainian people by the Russian leadership and that is now ongoing for more than 3 years, the coming of Trump to the White House has only made the things worse, because what we have seen from the current administration in Washington, arguably the most far-right administration in the U.S. history, was the appeasement strategy, was like emphasizing their affinity with Putin and with other authoritarian leaders throughout the world. And this Alaska meeting, many people were really afraid that this can be something akin to Munich conference back in 1938 with carving out Czechoslovakia without the presence even of the representatives of the government, Edward Beneš, the president, and others. But ultimately, it seems that no real difference was made. And now, in the latest meeting, maybe President Zelensky had to set another world record for saying thank you per minute or appeasing, pleasing the Marjorie Taylor Greene's boyfriend with his suit. But it seems that the positions of the sides, they haven't really changed, and that Russia is still pushing for these maximalist demands for grabbing as much Ukrainian land as it can, even that those territories, and this means also the people living there that haven't been occupied by Russian forces yet. And ultimately, there is no actual bona fide agreement and no real intention to make real peace talks and really find any sort of compromise, because this is all about this right of the force that is imposed on a weaker country. And now many people were going across with all these narratives of the so-called proxy war. But now when we see images of, for instance, Ukrainians being deported together with other people subject to this completely humiliating ICE procedures from the US, and no person is illegal. For instance, images of a Russian armored personnel carrier waving both Russian and American flags invading Ukrainian land. Maybe this means that in this situation, Trump and Putin are clearly on one side, that Putin is now being supported and promoted by the current U.S. administration.
What do you think of President Trump backtracking on the issue of a ceasefire? He seems to be saying they can get to a peace deal without needing an interim ceasefire. But the idea that before he met with President Putin, he said Putin would face serious consequences, you know, sanctions, if he didn't agree to a ceasefire. But now he says he doesn't see the need, and that in other peace deals he's negotiated, they didn't have to have a ceasefire first.
Yeah, so this is another concession made by Trump for Putin, and it was rather uncommon for him to make any harsh statements towards the Kremlin today, because ultimately from his coming to power till now, the main line was really to find ways to really court Vladimir Putin, and it seems that in order to be really greeted by the current U.S. government, you need to be at least a war criminal wanted by the International Criminal Court. So this goes for both Netanyahu and Putin. And if you are not, then you are humiliated and you are put into completely uneven, unequal conditions by Trump, Vance, and their cronies. So this means that the line of the Russian government that is to deny any prospect for the ceasefire, and ceasefire should be the meaningful prerequisite for any sort of further talks. Yes, if they don't agree to stop killing civilians, to stop attacks on civilian infrastructure, what are any prospects of any, you know, like agreement if they cannot make this simple concession? And this was the line of Moscow for the entirety of this time, to deny, to reject any proposals, any suggestions to stop killing civilians. And just these days we've experienced another attacks on Ukrainian cities. It has to be said that June and July have been one of the deadliest months since the outset of the full-scale invasion back in February 2022, by the number of civilian death toll. And for instance, recently Sumy State University premise has been destroyed by Russian shelling, and this meant that another educational facility joined thousands of universities, schools, hospitals that have been destroyed or damaged by Russian attacks. So you could see no even pretending to go to some compromise on the Russian side. It's still their language, old ultimatums and pressuring and actually raising Ukrainian cities to the ground.
So let's get the response of Professor John Mearsheimer. If you can respond to what Denis Pilash has said and also talk about this issue of, you know, if Ukraine doesn't join NATO, that they get, and it might have surprised